scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguila. Aguila in the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot save made by Aguila. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, let's get things going this hour on Flames Talk. It is Tuesday, October 29th, almost into November. Pat Steinberg along with you, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we've got lots to get to on this hour of the program, including the Daily Flames Roundtable in just a little bit. But it is a Tuesday, and we kick things off this hour on the program by saying hello to our NHL insider, Frank Saravalli, for South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave, or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. And Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff, dailyfaceoff.com, and more every Tuesday here on Flames Talk. Hello, sir. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you, Pat?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I definitely could sense a change in mood in this market over the last 4 or 5 days. The Flames start with their franchise best 5-0-1 record and now have lost three straight in regulation, all against very good teams, Carolina, Winnipeg, and most recently a 5-0 loss Monday in Vegas. I'm curious from where you stand, you know, is this a group coming back down to earth? Is this the told you so people being proven right? Or have you are you kind of still thinking the exact same about how you see this Flames group?
No, I tend to lean more towards this is a group that's coming back down to earth. And I just look at, like, particularly, not to put, you know, too fine a point on one game, but particularly the last game against Vegas. Like, you know, you look at some of those sort of conference leading teams, and I think it shows kind of a pretty sizable gap between the Flames and some of those other teams. Now, I'm not saying the rest of the year it's going to be all negative by any stretch. It's just that this was a little bit more in line. Like, if you had said to me after 9 games, the Flames are 5-3-1, I'd be like, okay, yeah. And right. That's a path to be competitive. I definitely didn't see it kind of opening as strong as it did. And it's probably not as, you know, ugly as some parts of the last 3 games were. The answer is it's probably somewhere in the middle.
One of the big things, and I think that's a really fair way of putting it, one of the things that has allowed Calgary to get off to a 5-3-1 starter, a 5-0-1 starter, wherever you want to pinpoint it in the first 9 games, has been their goaltending. They now, after Monday's loss, are 5th overall in 5-5 save percentage at .937, 9th overall in overall team save percentage at .903. I don't know how much longer they remain top 10 in both those categories. I don't, because there's still a lot of uncertainty and many question marks surrounding these two guys they've got right now. But I'm just curious as to your you know, 200-foot view on Calgary's goaltending as they've alternated Vladar and Wolf through the first 9 games.
See, I'm actually way more bullish, and I would suggest that part is one section of the Flames game and profile that probably is pretty sustainable. Vladar has looked excellent because, it sounds funny to say now with how well he's played, but go back to pre-training camp and we're like, how's this guy going to fare with the injury and just making his way back from that? So he's looked really impressive. I think there haven't been really too many moments that have been too big for Dustin Wolf, which is certainly a really nice development. And I think this Flames goaltending tandem as a whole is really quite formidable. To me, I think there's a couple question marks, to be honest, in front of them. It's, will they continue to score at the pace that they have to start or close to it? What is their new normal? And two, do they have the depth on the blue line to really remain as consistent as they started, if that makes sense. So I think those are the two larger question marks for me.
Yep.
I would put goaltending way behind those other things.
And just last one on this Flames group, just a thought on a pretty special milestone. And in this market, Michael Backlund hitting 1,000 games, becoming the second player in franchise history to suit up in 1,000 with the Flames organization. That means a lot in this market. And, you know, I know that you've spoken with him many times over the years. And you know, there you were all over the story of him remaining in Calgary and being named team captain ahead of last season. I'm just curious your thoughts on a pretty special milestone for Calgary's second-year captain.
Special person, special connection to the city. His commitment has been in some ways unrivaled, particularly in the face of some other guys who felt like it was more important or made more sense for them to move on to greener pastures. He's someone that competes. He's someone that brings an edge when necessary. And I just, like, if I'm going to look back on Michael Backlund's first 1,000 games, one of the biggest things that I'll recall and remember is the fact that he's someone that in the Battle of Alberta finds a way to ratchet up his production. When it matters to Calgary, when it matters to Flames fans, he shows up and is counted every single time. And there aren't that many players whose numbers probably in Flames lore go up against the Oilers as opposed to their regular season production, but he's certainly on that list. And just I think the Flames are really, they're lucky to have someone like him steer this group through what could be in some views a turbulent few years, that he's, you know, pilots don't earn their living flying in fair weather. They earn it when there's lots of stuff happening.
Yeah.
And that's sort of where I think of Michael Backlund.
Still wonder, 2.5 years ago, if the Backlund line gets hard matched against McDavid a little earlier, how that Battle of Alberta, I still think the Oilers probably win when it's all said and done. But I do wonder how that Battle of Alberta might be a little bit different if that hard match started a little earlier. We're chatting with Frank Saravalli. Speaking of Connor McDavid, that's the big news in the hockey world. We started Flames, but let's dive in on the provincial rivals. After Connor McDavid leaves Monday's loss to Columbus and doesn't return, returns to Edmonton. What are we hearing? What do we know about number 97 and where that status lies right now, Frank?
Well, not much, to be honest. This has been a tough nut to crack. I'll be honest, not getting a lot of returned calls and or messages. This one they're keeping under wraps. My sneaking suspicion, my guess, if I had to provide one, is that he misses the next 2 to 3 weeks with some kind of ankle sprain, high ankle sprain, whatever it might be. I think there's two elements to this. One, there's a precautionary part of it because he is the best player on the planet, that they want to make sure they take their time and do this right. And two, it's purely just a function of being on the road. You're in Columbus. The facilities that you have available to you are not the same that you have at home. So you want to make sure you do all the imaging necessary to feel confident that there's no ligament and or structural issues. And then you assess and go from there. And so there's obviously different varying levels of severity when it comes to an injury like this, which we all sort of put our doctor's hat on and hypothesize.
Yeah.
But that part hasn't been confirmed yet. And in the meantime, the Oilers have made the decision to call up Noah Philp and Drake Caggiula. Philp would be the guy that would be inserted into the lineup for McDavid. And I believe that since there's also a Calgary connection here, I believe that the guy coming out for Drake Caggiula would be Derek Ryan.
Okay. In the past, and look, since his rookie season where he broke his collarbone, Connor McDavid has been remarkably durable.
Mm-hmm.
We even know how he was able to beat so many odds a number of years ago and come back from that injury in game 82. when he has
So he's played, by the way, just in case you're curious, he's played a bunch of full seasons, but 2018-19, four games, 2019-20, seven games, 22, two games, and last season, six. So it's not very many games on the sideline for Connor McDavid.
And when he has been out, we have seen routinely the soon-to-be highest-paid player in the NHL, Leon Draisaitl, raise his game and really take the team on his shoulders. I do wonder, you know, it was a dreadful outing last night in Columbus, and we know that it has not been a desired start in the provincial capital. What's your read on how the Oilers respond here? Is this a galvanizing thing, or is this just adding more to what has been a potentially disastrous beginning to the year?
Well, I can't look into my crystal ball and say which way they're going to react, because I don't have one. But I will say that it was highly concerning to me that their captain and best player goes down and they're sitting on the bench as nervous as every other Oiler fan is back in Edmonton. That should have been a galvanizing moment in and of itself, 37 seconds into the game. With all due respect to Columbus and how surprising they've been at home, I mean, they've beaten up some pretty good teams that thought they were going to go in there and crush Columbus. You know, look, last week it was the Leafs they put up six against. They put up six against the Colorado Avalanche. That part has been surprising, but where were the Oilers in response to that? Not nearly good enough. And it was fascinating to see them wilt. And you mentioned Draisaitl and his ability to raise his level. That's great, but where is Zach Hyman? Where is Ryan Nugent-Hopkins? Where are these other guys that need to step up that have done next to nothing for the Oilers to this point in the season? Goals for, 32nd in the league. Shooting percentage, 32nd in the league. We know this team is way more talented than that, but to me, this is why you don't bleep around with a bad start, because you don't know how it's going to end up being compounded when you end up having a player of that magnitude likely miss some time.
Let me ask you about one of the names you mentioned there, because I have that written down next. 90 goals the last two seasons for Zach Hyman. He has none through his first 10 and just the one assist. And, you know, you talk to people in Edmonton who watch the team closer than we do here in Calgary, and I fully grant you, that's why I ask you, because I know how closely you watch that Oilers group. What are we seeing right now with Zach Hyman? The consensus is that he's got no confidence at this point, and that's just exacerbating the issue. But I'm just curious as to what you're seeing with a guy that, I love the way you phrased it, when he signed in Edmonton for the 21-22 season, you called him the NHL's premier press player, and that's what Hyman is at his best. Why aren't we seeing that right now?
Your guess is as good as mine. I mean, confidence might be part of it, although he's never really struck me as someone whose confidence wavers. You could make the joke, I guess his parents aren't paying enough for him to score.
I was thinking
score,
the exact
if you remember
same.
That,
I was thinking the
that
exact
squabble.
Yep.
I really don't have an answer, because in theory, I've said this before on the show, I believe this year's Oiler roster is the best top six that they've had since the 1980s. So it's not for lack of talent that he's playing with. It's not for deployment. The power play has really struggled beyond belief. Every facet of that team's game has been off, and it seems like he has certainly been a big contributor in reasons why they haven't been able to get it together. And I think when you look at all of it, you know, you're expecting all those things to rebound. In an odd way, the fact that they were 4-4-1 with all those numbers that I just mentioned before the loss to Columbus, kind of a wild record, all things considered.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if you said to me 32nd in the league in goals for, 32nd in the league in shooting percentage, god-awful penalty kill and power play, like, wouldn't you be thinking more along the lines of San Jose Sharks 1-7-2?
Yeah. And you throw onto that the third worst goaltending in the NHL as well by team save percentage. Yeah, you would think that they'd be maybe even a little further back than they are right now. Which I guess if you're an Oilers fan could be a little grain of solace in what's been a fairly frustrating start to the season, I would imagine.
But I can assure you that's not what anyone's feeling today up Highway 2.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And for good reason with the uncertainty surrounding their captain. We're chatting with Frank Saravalli, Daily Faceoff, dailyfaceoff.com. Joins us Tuesdays here on Flames Talk. Hey, Winnipeg loses for the first time, so they don't go 9-for-9 out of the gates. 8-1-0 is where the Jets now sit after a loss to Toronto last week. They fought hard and definitely had their opportunities in that game. I'm curious as to where you are on the Jets. I mean, you take a look at some of the underlyings, and they don't paint the prettiest picture in some ways. They've gotten incredible goaltending from both their guys so far. What's your feel on the Jets? I know that they're obviously in a great spot and have built up a big cushion here. Are they a contender, or are they closer to the middle of the pack for you?
I view them as closer to a contender and that inner circle of contending teams than middle of the pack. And I think the big reason for that is I kind of underestimated their identity and how important that is. Like, their commitment to defend is outstanding. And they really are a difficult team to play against because they come at you in waves. They're not a team that experiences a drop-off when their third and fourth lines are on the ice. And that's incredibly valuable. Like, that Adam Lowry line might be the best third line in the league, and probably by a wide margin. So if that's the case, and then you've got Kyle Connor shooting the lights out and Mark Scheifele as a playmaker – and you're backstopped by, and I'm really glad you mentioned both goalies have played really well because, you know, even when you get a Saturday night, it's not Hellebuck in net and they don't miss a beat. So I've been really impressed with the Jets, not just because of their sterling record, but really just because of the way that they've gone about doing it. They've won some games in overtime. You know, they've hung on. In other games, like they've had a lot of really impressive moments to start.
Yep. What are we seeing from Cole Caulfield right now in Montreal? Is this the true arrival season for a guy that Habs fans have been talking about for years, and a guy that we've known has had incredible natural goal scoring ability since before he broke into the NHL? But is this kind of the true arrival for Caulfield?
Feels like that for me, and also probably about time, because I predicted last season he would score 40. And so for him to be on track to do that, you know, obviously well ahead of that pace to this point already, what I see is someone that is playing with a ton of confidence, but more than that, seems to have figured out where to go and how to read the NHL play. And I know that sounds funny to say, but he has become a master. He's had this knack at other levels, but because the game is played so differently, because it's more detail oriented, he's found soft areas on the ice to go to get the puck. And he also, a lot like Kyle Connor, who I just talked about, the puck's on and off his stick in like 0.3 seconds. There's no thought process. It's just catch, release. And that part, it's like his shot is top 10 in the league easily. But he's found that space to go to, which I think is just as important as having a great shot. If you can't get it off, it doesn't really matter.
Does he crack Team USA later on this year at the Four Nations face-off?
I'd be surprised if he does not.
Okay. Pretty cool to see. I remember the day he made his NHL debut in a game in front of zero fans against the Calgary Flames in like the spring of 2021. I remember the excitement.
I'm glad you mentioned that too, because look at the progression from Alexis Lafreniere and look at the progression from a lot of guys who were selected in that exact period of time, the most unusual.
His teammates, Slavkovsky.
The most unusual period of time for any player to go through a development curve and pass. It's taken its toll on a lot of players, and it's thrown off trajectories and timelines and everything else. And to see a lot of those guys find their footing now in the NHL, I don't think they're unrelated.
Last one for you, Frank, and I'm just over here at dailyfaceoff.com on your handy lines tool, and I'm looking at the way the Colorado Avalanche break down, and I know that we talked a little bit about them either last week or the week before about timelines for Nichushkin and Landeskog and when they might be able to get those guys back. On top of that, they end up losing Ross Colton. The Avs normalized. They had won the five in a row. It gets snapped on Monday night, but are we talking about an Avs team that's going to be able to withstand and stem the tide until they get their reinforcements, until they're a little bit closer to full strength?
I'm really not sold. I think their depth on that team has eroded in a real significant way before all these injuries piled up. And I think that only exacerbates the problem, really. They had to make some difficult decisions this summer when it came to their salary cap situation, in part because of the need to keep money aside to activate Nichushkin and Landeskog. And mm-hmm. So if you look at their lineup for next game, if I'm not mistaken, they've got $26 million in forwards that are going to be watching from afar. That's hard to manage. Like, I don't know that many organizations that have the depth to be able to go that deep in their system and find competent replacements who are ready for more. And so that plus their goaltending situation, which I'm not a believer, at least to this point, that Eustace Annanen can be the guy that carries the ball for a long period of time. Kaapo Kähkönen was recalled from his conditioning loan, and I wouldn't be shocked to see him get a start at some point sometime soon. But they've got to figure something out on the goalie front, because I don't think they have an answer there that's going to allow that team to compete. So that plus all the pieces that they're missing, and I really do not believe, even for a team that won five in a row, that the Colorado Avalanche are out of the woods.
Yeah. Yeah, I am fascinated to see what these next number of weeks end up looking like. Colton sounds like he's out for a while. Are we talking anything imminent-ish on guys returning, or like what are we talking in that regard?
I mean, Landeskog, I don't think is anywhere close. Nichushkin, we're talking November 13th after that date. The rest of this group, I mean, it's good to get Devon Taves back and playing again, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
But Colton is like, we're talking, I believe, months, not weeks.
And that's like their third or fourth best forward right now with those two guys missing.
He was eight. He had scored 8 goals in 9 games to start.
Yep. Woof. That's that is going to be fascinating for Jared Bednar's team, how they're able to hold on, because you want to talk about top heavy. I don't know if there's a more top-heavy team right now in the NHL than the Avalanche for all the reasons that you just mentioned. Great stuff, Frank. Really appreciate the insight. As always, we'll do it again next Tuesday. Be well, hey, and thanks for doing this as always.
Yep, have a good night, Pat.
He is Frank Saravalli. He is our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. He joins us every Tuesday here on Flames Talk, and he joins us thanks to our friends at South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Okay, Daily Flames round table time on this Tuesday. Pat Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson, and now the voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills as well. Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport. Well, gentlemen, we don't usually just kind of like point blank react to a game the next day. But with the way this hour works, with Frank Saravalli kicking us off, with the way Monday night at T-Mobile Arena went, with the Flames losing, going away really for the first time this year and for the first time this season, looking like they were the second best team on the ice for a vast majority of the hockey game. I think that's what we should do. Gents, now three straight losses for the Flames, 5-0 the final score Monday in Las Vegas. How do we react to Monday's setback against the Golden Knights?
Is it overreaction Tuesday for us?
It depends where you want to take it.
Yeah, I mean, truth be told, that was a tough game to watch. For me, by far, the worst game the Flames have played this season. You know, even in the first two games of their three-game losing streak, I thought there was a lot to like. I thought they played 30, 35 pretty good minutes against the Hurricanes. I thought they probably played 35 or 40 good minutes against the Jets. And, you know, they lost to two good teams, but they were in those games right until the end. Last night, I actually didn't mind their first period, fellas. I thought it was a pretty good road period for the Flames. Shots on goal were 6-6. Yeah, you're down 1-0, but you're very much in the hockey game to go to the second, and then they just completely fell off the face of the earth. And I'll give the Golden Knights credit. Listen, they've always been a great home team. They've been fantastic at T-Mobile Arena this season. They're 7-0-0 on home ice, so we knew it wasn't going to be an easy game for the Flames, but the Golden Knights did make it difficult, and the Flames, I thought, made it more difficult. The Golden Knights, for me, the strong suit of their game last night was their neutral zone forecheck. They just made life miserable for the Flames trying to come out of their own end. They'd get across their blue line sometimes, and then the Golden Knights would steal the puck and either skate it back in or shoot it back in, and then the Flames were on their heels again, and that's how the final 40 minutes looked to me. And it was just a tough night for almost every single one of the players. You know, there were maybe three or four or five guys who I thought had okay games or good games last night. To the rest of the guys, I thought, struggled. So, you know, full credit to the Golden Knights. They were by far the better of the two teams last night. But for me, the Flames just played their worst game of the season and made life too easy for their opponent.
It it absolutely was the worst we've seen out of this Flames team by, I think, almost every measure, guys. Like, there just was so little to like. And I don't want to make a mountain out of it, but Pat, you and I sat here yesterday on Flames Talk, and you know, one of the discussion points was, well, it's a pretty significant game because you can't let losses start to pile up, right?
Yep.
You worked really hard to get off to a great start and to build yourself, you know, a little bit of a cushion and to stash a bunch of points in the standings. But once you start to skid a little, you got to make sure that you get out of it and get out of it quickly. And I guess that's what I found sort of concerning last night, is that we just didn't see the pushback at all. And I was chatting this morning with my post-media colleague, Danny Austin, and he made a great point in that he said the way that this Flames team knows that they have to play to win hockey games, the way their commitment level and their pace and everything has to be to have success, it's a really hard way to play.
Yep.
And maybe the most concerning part last night was after that first period, they didn't seem that interested in playing it. And again, it's one game out of nine. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to make a huge deal out of it. Certainly, all told, through nine games, the good has outweighed the bad. But last night was one of those where you plug your nose because it was pretty tough to watch.
Yeah, and for the first time this year, guys, and I don't think it's overreaction Tuesday, Willsy. I think we're just kind of, I mean, look, they've had a pretty nice nine game stretch, and even those two regulation losses prior to the Vegas one, as you said, there were things to like. And the thing that I think was the most notable or noticeable about the loss in Vegas was that for the first time it felt like there were like significant number of passengers, to your point. And that is a little concerning, because on the one hand, some of the passengers were guys that have really started to fall off after nice starts. Like, they're going to, they need more from Jonathan Huberdeau now. They need more from Anthony Mantha now. Those two got off to really nice starts and deserve the positive accolades they were getting in the first week and a bit of the season, but it's really dropped off. And you know, I felt bad for Dan Vladar. I thought he deserved better. I thought he gave him another quality start. And it was one of those nights where you're like, man, they just weren't very good. And I do wonder, and this is not to make excuses, I do wonder if part of what we saw and part of the lack of that trademark pushback that we've seen in every other game to this point. I do wonder if it just is kind of willsy to what Wes was talking about there, that there's a hard brand of hockey to play, and guys have admitted that. I've heard Blake Coleman say that. I've heard Ryan Lomberg say that. I've heard other guys talk about how this can be, at times, a tough brand of hockey to play. And so when you're in a stretch where you're playing a lot of hockey, all of a sudden the Flames are right in the teeth of a bit of a busy stretch in their schedule, and now they're in this kind of a gauntlet against some really good teams. We've talked about, you know, you go from Carolina, considered to be one of the elite, to an unbeaten Jets, to obviously a very good Vegas team who are just a juggernaut on home ice. You've got New Jersey and Edmonton coming up here. Utah has definitely been a game challenge and have not been easy. So this is a pretty tough six-game stretch. They're now halfway through. And so you mix all of that in. I do wonder if there was a little bit of that going on in the final 40 minutes last night. By no means do I think that's an excuse, but I am curious to see if, and Wilsey, as you told me a little earlier, I do wonder if taking the day off and not deciding to skate and practice is related to that, and I wonder what that might do going into Wednesday's game against Utah. Again, not an excuse. They weren't good enough. You don't like to see them being that dramatically second best over the course of a night, especially when that hadn't been the case in the first eight games. But as even Blake Coleman said on Monday night, okay, well, good to get someone like that out of the way earlier. Let's see what this group's made of now. I'm curious to see.
Mm-hmm. And good teams do have bad games. I mean, the best teams in the league are going to have off nights from time to time. But I guess what's concerning is that the Flames game, at least for me, has been trending in the wrong direction for a little while since that 3-0 start to the season. But there have been good stretches. Again, I like them quite a bit in those losses to the Hurricanes and the Jets. They just didn't get anything out of those games. Didn't like them against the Golden Knights. But, you know, that can happen to you in Las Vegas. The Golden Knights are a team that rolls four lines and three pairings and generally gets really good goaltending, as they did from Calgary native Aiden Hill last night. And, you know, they can certainly overwhelm you, especially with the crowd support they get at T-Mobile Arena. Being in that building, guys, you can just feel it. When the crowd gets going, the Golden Knights get going. When the Golden Knights get going, the crowd gets going. And then they start coming at you in waves. And that's what we saw last night. And that's what the Flames, despite not having their A game, did a pretty good job kind of hanging around in that hockey game through two periods, in large part thanks to the goaltending of Dan Vladar. And then the game just got completely away from them with three goals against in the third. But it was concerning, because there were a number of guys who certainly didn't have their A game, or maybe even B game. And, you know, I would say a small group of players who did appear to be on their games last night. But yeah, you hope it's just a one-off. You hope they bounce back and play a good game and celebrate Michael Backlund's 1,000th game in this league with a win on Wednesday night. But they're going to have to be a lot better as a group. And I think a lot of individuals are going to have to look in the mirror and understand that they're going to have to be better for the team to be better. So we'll see where they go from here. But if it's one really bad game, I think you can live with that. What you don't want is for this losing streak to continue and for one really bad game to turn into two or more.
Daily Flames Roundtable. He's Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg on this Tuesday edition of Flames Talk. And kind of building on that now, guys, you know, I wondered at the end of the second period if Ryan Huska was going blender mode, or if we saw some different line combinations, because there were a couple of Vegas power plays at the back half of the second. And a lot of times, you know, he'll come out of penalty kills and load up a little bit and change him up temporarily before going back to status quo. Well, in this case, he didn't. To start the third period, all four lines changed, and the most drastic change we've seen all year long. So my question would be, as they did not practice on Tuesday, as they get set for morning skate on Wednesday, my question would be, guys, assuming that we do see something a little different for Wednesday's game in Utah, of the lines that have been generally consistent, of the look that's been generally consistent through the first nine games, is there one line or a set of lines that you'd like to see remain status quo as they go into Wednesday's game against the Utah Hockey Club?
Yeah, there's one line. I would probably leave the line with Michael Backlund between Connor Zary and Blake Coleman alone. And I know that we saw Kadri and the kids back together last night, but Zary, Backlund, and Coleman has been consistent. And they weren't great against the Golden Knights, I understand that. But I think they deserve to have a little bit longer leash than that because they have been really good for most of the season. The one line that for me is not working anymore, and I thought it was good in the first few games and has completely fallen off since, is the line with Martin Pospisil between Jonathan Huberdeau and Anthony Mantha. And for me, guys, and I said this, I don't know if it was late last week or earlier this week, I would press pause on the Martin Pospisil et cetera experiment. And I'm not putting it all on him, although I don't think he's been as effective, as impactful playing at center as he was on the wing in his rookie season, because I do think that a lot of the blame has to fall on the shoulders of his wingers, Jonathan Huberdeau and Anthony Mantha. Again, they were really good early in the season, but they've struggled of late. So what I would do is probably give Huberdeau and Mantha one more game together, or at least start Wednesday's game with them playing on the wings on the same line. But I'd put Yegor Sharangovich at center on that line. He'll bring some pace to that line. He's a good 200-foot player. Hopefully he can win some face-offs. Was pretty good in that area on Monday night. So Mick and I on the flight from Las Vegas to Salt Lake City last night were fooling around with line combinations. So here's the consensus we came up with. So Kuzmenko with Kadri and Pospisil, Huberdeau with Sharangovich and Mantha, Zeri stays with Backlund and Coleman, and then Lomberg with Kirkland and Klapka. So that's what we've guys. That's what we've got. How about you guys?
I'd like to see a little bit more of Kadri, Zeri, and Pospisil. And so to answer Pat's initial question, just before I kind of run through what I'd be looking at, There's not a group that I would have to leave together from the start of the season. And I think, Wilsey, and you did a good job of laying out why, that Zeri Backlund Coleman combination is something that's worked, something that you know you can fall back on. But I want to use Connor Zeri with the confidence that he's shown carrying the puck. If I'm putting together the lines, I want to use him to try and inject a bit of a spark on another line offensively. And I'd like to see what Zeri with Pospisil and Kadri might look like for another game or two or whatever, because it was a pretty inauspicious start for them last night. Keegan Kolesar scores a goal against them on the second shift, or their second shift of the third period, their second shift as a line this season. You know, that game kind of goes to, you know, wearing a handbasket after that. But that's a group that I'd like to see a little bit more of. I think Zeri and Kadri can be an effective offensive duo, and I know that we've seen that. I think Pospisil can be much more effective than he's been of late at center. He looks like a guy who is probably a little bit tentative right now to even take a penalty. And that's taken some aggressiveness out of his game. I'm just not noticing Martin Pospisil nearly as much as I have in the past on the wing. And so that's one I saw it last night and thought, you know what? That's one I'd like to see a little bit more of. And again, I think Zeri has shown he can play in that spot. The beauty of Mr. 1000, Michael Backlund, and Blake Coleman is you can put just about anybody in there. Yeah. And not saying that Connor Zeri's not doing a good job on that line, but, you know, whether it's Yegor Sharangovich or whether it's Sam Honzek, perhaps, if he's healthy and able to go tomorrow, there's so many guys that you can put in that spot. It's probably the rest of the forward lines that I start to have a little trouble with, because Anthony Mantha has not done a whole lot for the Calgary Flames of late. Jonathan Huberdeau has struggled of late. Andre Kuzmenko is down the lineup in the third period more often than not for a reason. And so I kind of wonder what to make of a sort of leftover line. But at the top of my lineup sheet, I'd have Zeri, Kadri, and Pospisil.
I'm really torn on this, guys, because, Wilsey, the one that I immediately go to is the same one you did, keeping Zeri with Backlund and Coleman, because I do think it's been consistently their best line. I thought it was the best line that they had last night. In the first period when things were even, I thought they were a massive reason why it was even. And I've liked it. I think that, and I think what it's doing is bringing more out of Zeri and rounding Zeri's game out even more. And I think will only be extremely helpful for a second-year NHLer in turning Connor Zeri into more and more what looks like a core piece going forward. And maybe we didn't think, well, definitely we didn't think that a year ago. And he showed last year playing mostly with Kadri and Pospisil that, you know, he's got that potential. And I'm really impressed with, in the most difficult role or difficult line on the team to play on, at least in terms of the usage. I think Wes's point about how anybody can play with Backlund and Coleman is bang on, and I agree. But at the same time, if you're a second-year NHLer, you're also going up against the team's best lines every single night. Now, as the Flames are approaching 10 games through the season, the Flames have used that line in a defensive usage role almost 70% of the time. In 9 games, Backlund, Coleman, and Zeri as a trio have seen just 27 offensive zone faceoffs, compared to 57 in the defensive zone. So, and yet Zeri has still been offensively dynamic, and yet he has not struggled in the two-way game. He has not struggled with his defensive assignments. And yes, a ton of credit goes to Backlund and Coleman for making it easy on him. But I just think having Zeri there rounds him out. So that to me is the one that I would like to see remain together. And yet, as Wes said, there's definitely reason, if you're trying to get a spark, to maybe go back to something familiar like Kadri and the kids, like what we saw in the third period on Monday. Here's what it truly comes down to for me. This is no knock on Rooney. This is no knock on Kirkland. This is no knock on Pospisil, and no knock on Sharon Govich. But if staying competitive is and trying to make the playoffs is what they want to do, and I don't think that is something that Craig Conroy is going to go out of his way to try to do, but getting that young center iceman makes a lot of sense. And I just, they don't have a ready-made option behind Kadri and Backlund. I'm with you, Wilsey. I'm putting pause on the Pospisil experiment. Sharon Govich, maybe, but I'm not a believer in that, and I don't even disagree with doing that for the time being. You know, Zeri, if we're going to keep him on the wing, well, then he's not an option. You know, whether it's a Shane Pinto or a Tomasino or a Krebs or a McMichael or whatever other name you want to throw out there that's a 23, 24-year-old center that could jump in and play right away. You can see the need for it in the immediacy as we go through this conversation right now.
You can, but you know, teams aren't looking to give away 22, 23, 24-year-old centermen.
Typically not.
You know, maybe once you get into the back half of the season, once you're approaching the NHL's trade deadline, you know, if a contender thinks they're maybe a veteran player away from winning a Stanley Cup and feel like they're in a position to move a younger player who's maybe not in lineup or playing further down their lineup, then I could see it being a more realistic possibility. But that sounds like a tough trade to make, at least in October or November, but who knows? So let me ask you guys this. Would you agree that the Backlund, Zeri, Coleman line has been the Flames' most consistent this season?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So then if you're looking for things that work, why break up the one line that has consistently worked would be my question. So that's why I would leave Zeri with Backlund and Coleman, even though I do think that obviously there was a lot last year to like with that Kadri and the kids line. But I think that's a line that you could always go to in the second or third period of a game, kind of like the Flames did against the Golden Knights on Monday. If things aren't working, you can fall back on that and try to energize the guys that way. But the two guys who really need to get going are Huberto and Mantha. And maybe Sharon Govich, with the style of hockey that he plays, can help that happen. Kadri and Kuzmenko have had a lot of chemistry together, and Pospisil would bring a different element to that line if he can just play north-south, get in there and bang and crash, and maybe open things up a little bit for two of your best offensive players. And I think Kadri's playing at a really high level, so it feels like whoever's playing with him is put in a pretty good position to have success. As far as the fourth line is concerned, you know, Justin Kirkland for me is still playing pretty well. So I'd play him ahead of Kevin Rooney if it's, you know, one guy or the other guy. Ryan Lomberg, I don't think he's coming out. He's been effective in his role. Now, the one thing I do wonder about, fellas, Sam Honzak's close. He's with the team on the trip. if you bring him off of IR, you have to assign somebody. But maybe you do that because the player could just fly home with the team after the game tomorrow. So let's say you send somebody down to the Wranglers on paper and then they fly home with you. But maybe you put Sam Honzek in the lineup tomorrow night on the right side of that fourth line to start. And if the game isn't going the way you want it to, or if somebody in your top nine isn't performing at the level they need to be, then you can bump him up your lineup. You could also maybe use him on your second power play. So just another option. The good news is the Flames do have some options and some different things they can try, but clearly what they tried for the first 40 or so minutes last night, especially in that second period, did not work.
I know we're up against it for time a little bit here, but I just want to answer the question you raised, Wilsey, which was why would you split up that backline line? And I will be really curious to see where Ryan Husk goes with this. My answer to that is that I think you know that you can split up that backline line, and whoever you play with, Backlund and Coleman, that line's still going to be a positive for you. And I think the reason to do it is that Zeri might be the guy who can get one of those other lines really clicking a little bit more than they are right now.
The other guy who I want to see back in tomorrow night, guys, is Jake Bean. And I know that there's been a few mistakes, not a lot. I talked to the coaches about him yesterday. There's just been a few. And with the internal competition they have on defense with eight guys on the roster, if a guy makes one or two mistakes, he might be coming out. But, you know, for a team that's suddenly struggling to score goals, Jake Bean scored in the last game he played in. First goal as a member of the Flames for the Calgary kid. And he's got 3 points in six games. So he's helped drive some offense. So I'd like to see him back in too.
Great stuff, gentlemen. We'll see how everything looks Wednesday morning. Curious to see, and obviously wanted to get these questions and these topics covered now. On Wednesday, we'll focus mostly on Michael Backlund on the roundtable. So wanted to talk about this stuff now and focus more on number 11 on Wednesday. Thank you, Wilsey. Have yourself a wonderful rest of your night. Appreciate it, pal.
Okay, guys, have a good night.
He is Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap things up this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks to Shannon Cam, our producers this hour. And the Daily Flames Roundtable is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.